This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noelle Lim. It's 7.06 in the morning, Tuesday the 9th of March, and in about 15 minutes we're going to be talking about protection for domestic helpers in Malaysia with Irene Xavier, President of Persatuan Sahabat Wanita Selangor. We're also running a poll on the 12th Malaysia Plan, asking you what should be the top priority. Is it a swift economic recovery? Is it high productivity jobs, digitalization, or better governance? Let us know what you think. But before that, we are taking a look at the markets.
Yeah, over in the US, the Dow was up 1%, climbing as investors look to be piling into the economic comeback plays after the Senate approved a new COVID stimulus package. I think that was about $1.9 trillion in stimulus. That said, though, the sell-off in high-flying tech shares continued and put pressure on broader markets. And we saw that in the S&P 500, which was down 0.5%, but even more so in the NASDAQ, which was down 2.4%. That takes the NASDAQ below 10% down from its February 12th closing high, and thus falling into correction territory over there.
Yeah, and in Asia, the Nikkei 225 closed down 0.4%. Shanghai Composite down 2.3%. Hang Seng also down by about 1.9%. Singapore's STI was up 1.9%. FBM KLCI closed up 0.7%.
And so for some insight into international markets this morning, we're speaking with Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, thanks so much for joining us today. Now, there is a bit of a sense of deja vu here because 10-year US Treasury bond yields are back up to 1.6%. What are markets trying to tell us?
Well, there's a push and pull in the markets right now, but with a 10-year back up to 160, I think the backup reflects stronger than expected growth, nominal growth, real growth, however you want to call it. So better than expected earnings. So, you know, there's going to be days when the yield curve steepening is going to increase volatility, draw down on the confidence. But today it was more good growth, strong growth, continued earnings expectations, only higher.
Right. And Joe, this week we're going to see some auctions of some sizable amount of 10 and 30 year US treasuries. How will the uptake on these upcoming issuances affect, I guess, the equity sentiment?
Well, the markets know it's coming. I mean, this is remarkable, the $1.9 trillion, the stimulus package, that's larger than most economies in the world. Even more remarkable, we're going to borrow all the money. It is quite amazing. So everyone knows about the supply. And I do, you know, we've got the Fed being a buyer, so there'll be enough out there to meet the, you know, demand to meet the supply. But there is earlier than expected, that maybe it's a story for later this year, the level of debt is our debt levels are going up as the cost of capital, interest rates are going up. That's going to catch the market's attention, but not today or not this week.
Well, given that the NASDAQ had corrected sharply again, its lowest since November, at what point is it time to bottom fish, or are the valuations still too rich?
Well, you know, we still think, we think money should be going into cyclicals, you know, whether it's the financials, the energy, materials. We still think that the cyclical rally is early on. Maybe we're not even halfway through that. So, but you're right, as the correction continues in tech, if you have a 2-3 year horizon, you want to be dollar cost averaging. You want to be putting more, you want to be getting more exposure to big US tech as this correction grinds on, for sure.
But Joe, after last week's better than expected job numbers, how structurally robust is the recovery in the US labor market?
It's playing out like we saw after the Great Financial Crisis. In the Great Financial Crisis, it took a while for the employment picture to improve, particularly amongst lower skilled, lower educated workers. So this is exactly the same thing. You know, we're already seeing seeing wages rise because there's a lack of workers in manufacturing, computer scientists, healthcare. But, you know, we have, you know, 10% of our labor force does not have a high school education. So they get absorbed last, and that's exactly what's going to transpire. So this is going to take another, two or three years. Remember, most of consumer spending happens at the other end of the scale, the income scale. It's a higher income households that drive consumer spending. So I think that's the key issue. Consumer spending this year in the United States is going to be off the chart on a historic basis, even as we absorb more of the labor market.
And on a related but not so related note as well, Joe, we're looking at crude oil because that's also an upward trend and has implications on the inflationary environment overall. And Brent crude gushed past $70 a barrel yesterday. And this was, I think, on the back of the Saudi Aramco facilities that were attacked the morning before. With this increased volatility, or at least this sharp increasing in prices, where do you see levels recalibrating to in the short term?
In the short term, right, you know, in that $60 to $70 range, I think that's supportive of the strong economic growth being led by the United States, China 6%. And then you throw in any geopolitical event, yes, and it blows through 70. But, you know, the thing that gives me comfort is that the U.S. is a swing producer as well. So if we need to produce more oil, we can, whether it's, you know, public sector lands or private sector in particular. So, you know, I'm not worried about oil going to $100 because that would hurt Saudi Arabia and Russia, the OPEC producers. That's the last thing they want. But I do think we're right in kind of that sweet spot, 55, 65. They make a lot of money. They can pump efficiently, profitably. I think they want to stay there.
Right. So you don't think $70 is sustainable in the longer term at this juncture?
I really don't. I think they, because the OPEC members got to be careful, you know, don't get too greedy because as the higher prices go up, as you know, the demand goes down. And you bring in that incremental supply, i.e. the U.S. producers. That's exactly what they don't want.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Joe. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, giving us some insight into international markets this morning. If we turn our attention as well to some news out of the UK, food delivery company Deliveroo there has announced plans for an IPO in London after recording their best ever first quarter despite still posting losses in 2020. So they're planning to raise capital by selling new stock, but they didn't provide details on the size of the planned offering just yet.
Yeah, so this company is backed by Amazon and is valued at more than $7 billion based on a private funding round it completed in January. And it will be one of the largest London listing in several years. So looking at some of their values here, so the company's gross transaction value grew by 64% to about $5.7 billion in 2020. I guess everybody was just working from home, right? So there was a lot of deliveries done. And underlying gross profit nearly doubled to $490 million. But despite all these sterling figures, it still reported a loss, but it managed to narrow its underlying loss to about $309 million from $438 million in 2019.
Yeah, I guess the big question with all the delivery players, right, is whether it's a matter of scale, right? Whether is it a matter of growing your revenue to a point where you get the profitability, or can you consolidate the costs on your side to make it more efficient and grow those margins? Because yes, you can keep growing your revenue, but if you don't get to a point of profitability at some point, investors will get impatient. Deliveroo will list with a dual class share structure, which effective for 3 years, to provide the CEO with the stability to execute long-term plans. Essentially, it gives its differing control, right, depending on which class of shares that you have. But this seems to be only for 3 years. But with this in mind, this makes the delivery ineligible for the London Stock Exchange premium segment, and it can't be included in the benchmark indices such as the FTSE 100, despite its massive size, its expected size. This year, 13 firms have raised $5.9 billion in London, and Deliveroo is anticipated to add billions to this tally before the end of the month. This would mean that the UK IPO market could be on course to surpass its biggest first quarter on record since, I think, 2006 at this point, when proceeds reached £6.4 billion at that point. So that is, what, 14, 15 years at this juncture?
Yeah, so this is it's an interesting story, and it's one we'll be keeping a close watch on. Particularly, heartened to note that there is a sunset clause on this dual class share structure, because while, you know, dual class shares do help provide the leadership with stability and allow them to execute their vision, even if they may not necessarily be beneficial in the short term, longer term this can also raise problems, as we've seen in other companies like A big one is Facebook.
Facebook, right. So the joke with Facebook is that, yes, the board can fire Zuckerberg, but then as the biggest controlling voting shareholder, he'll just fire the board and the board will rehire him again, right? That's essentially the conundrum you have. And Facebook's not the only one with that.
Yep.
Snap's co-founders have 90% of the voting shares. You're essentially giving absolute power to these shareholders. And at a time when maybe you founders and ideas were more important and you had so much equity and capital flowing around, dual class shares have seemed like a point to protect the founders, but maybe we've taken, or investors have, some investors have taken it a bit too far. But we'll see whether this corrects in time.
Yes, indeed we will. And right now, though, we are heading into some messages. And then up next, domestic helper protection in Malaysia with Irene Xavier, president of Persatuan Sahabat Wanita Selangor. But initially, let's also take a look at some messages. Now, upgrading your organization's connectivity shouldn't be difficult, and you should be in complete control of how and when you upgrade. As a Maxis programmable network customer, you'll see your business operations benefit in many ways. Tune in to hear Paul McManus, Chief Enterprise Business Officer at Maxis, explain some of these benefits along with some handy use cases. That's happening Thursday, 11th of March at 7:35 a.m. only on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.